Do you need logos or custom designs for your small business? Then contact Pete from Diamond Graphic Studios today at diamondgraphicstudios@gmail.com. That's Diamond spelt D-Y-M-O-N-D, graphicstudios@gmail.com for your free quote. Diamond Graphic Studios, a proud sponsor of the Brand Podcast and Magazine, available online at thebrandmedia.uk or your favourite podcast player. Hello again and welcome to the fourth episode of The Brand Podcast, the podcast by creative-minded people made for and about creative-minded people. I am Pete Davis. Now sat with me today, at least in a virtual sense, is someone who is considered so cool and smooth. He was nicknamed the Italian Stallion when playing American football. But in the past 5 years, he seems to have traded in the expensive shoes, tight leather trousers and shirts missing a few buttons for a smock and a beret. Hello and welcome to Walsall's very own Rembrandt, Mr. Dean Barker. How are you, mate?
Hello. I'd like to say I have got leather trousers on at the moment. Can't fasten them, so I won't stand up and show you. I do try to squeeze in them at least a couple of nights a week. Yeah.
Good. I think most of us have gone up a few belt buckle sizes and jean sizes in the last year or so.
Yeah. I've very much embraced that as an excuse. to own how fat I am. And I mean, if you remember when we played, I was O-line 10, 12 years ago, and things have only really got worse since then.
Well, I see the beard is looking mighty fine there as well.
It is, yeah, it's weird. But it's a bit like having a pet. You don't exactly feed it, but you have to look after it. And, yeah, you know, you do spend a lot of time grooming it. But, yeah, it's nuts. Enjoying it, feeling the beard. I think it goes with the whole artistic prose, that sort of.
Definitely. Yeah. Definitely. Yeah. So, you and I just mentioned there, Dean, we met about a decade or so ago on the American football field. And I think most of the guys that we played with, I think they were aware that I, in some way, shape or form, was an artist. But for me, it was always pencil and paper, pens maybe, eventually digital. But you, however, from what I've seen, about 5 years ago or so, decided to take up art. And the one that probably I fear the most, painting, because there is literally no way of erasing anything. Once it's on canvas, isn't it? I mean, full disclosure, I don't think I've painted much up until this past year or so, yeah. Probably since I was in school, to be perfectly honest with you, which is a few more years ago than I'd care to admit. But as I say, in mid-2016, from what I can see, you decided to, in your own words, teach yourself to paint. Yeah. And my first sight of this on social media was a big red cherry.
Yes. So,
first off, had you painted or drawn much in the years that preceded this? And if not, what made you decide you wanted to get into not just art, but as I say, painting?
I'd always wanted to be artistic. I'd always wanted to be able to paint, to be able to draw, and never could. And I assumed, like many people, that art and being artistic was something some people were just lucky enough to be born with. It was just innate in some people. And I'd always kind of doodled, but never really been able to draw as such. And I always loved art. And I used to read a lot about art, but that was as artistic as I got. And my wife actually bought me it's a bit like paint by numbers. It was a Salvador Dali, so nice and simple. Salvador Dali, The Metamorphosis of Narcissus. And it was a canvas with a picture drawn on it and a set of the colour acrylics that you needed. And it kind of guided you through the process of how you did it. And I absolutely, completely fell in love because it turned out really good. So I think, you know, I don't want to say that Salvador Dali was, dialing it in, but I did it in one go.
Properly taught by one of the greats.
So after that, I was just completely hooked. And I found on this year, the YouTube that the kids are talking about these days, Although the kids are probably not talking about it these days, are they?
No, I think TikToks and...
There are these amazing people that do help, that do give free and often free instruct at all stages of learning to draw, to paint, and I would imagine anything else up to, I don't know, I don't know whether you can actually do brain surgery off YouTube yet.
I wouldn't like to try, but yeah, I mean, you never know.
So, and as I say, I've just never stopped. And yeah, and because I was obviously not exhibiting in any way, but I did want to think, see, is this any good? Because I absolutely love it. And so the only outlet for that was Facebook. And I did, I think the first picture you put on, right, yeah, was a big red cherry. And you know, just the comments and the wow, this is really good, and that's it. It's been part of my life ever since. With what you're saying though about painting being more sort of onerous than drawing, see, now I think it's absolutely the other way around, because if something's on canvas and it's not right, you can paint that out. You can paint over it and do it again. Whereas if it's on drawing, all you've got really is a rubber.
Yeah.
So my sense is that, or my feeling, my experience, because I paintings now, I do draw. I tend to have a little process that involves drawing stuff out first of all, and I think painting's a lot more forgiving than drawing.
So it's my mindset really that needs to change.
Yeah, it could well be. Yeah, that's it. You need to embrace the paint and grow a beard.
I've tried to do the second. I'm not that good at it. So, to be perfectly honest with you, you know, I've probably got children who can do better jobs than me at growing a beard, to be perfectly fair. I'm not going to slag off my kids now. That'd be really, really unfair. So during that first year, obviously, you know, you've done your paint by numbers, as you say, and you've started to embrace the paint. Now, obviously, looking at some of the pictures that you've got there during that first year, I'm just making a note for you. Girl in the Rain, there's some poppies, misty trees, lips, there's a harbour there. You seem to be looking at all sorts of different styles and techniques. You were also not confining yourself just to brushes, as you've just said yourself there. You know, with me, I'm confining myself to a pencil and a razor, and I'm stuck in that mindset perhaps. Whereas you were saying, I'm not just going to confine myself to brushes, because I believe the poppies you did, you used a palette knife, which I've got to be honest with you, up until recent years, watching stuff like, you know, Sky Arts, you know, Artist of the Years, and I'm seeing people basically draw with a knife, which is, you know, mind blown to me. You know, you decided yourself in that first year or two, I'm going to give it a go. You know, sod just the brushes, I'm going to use a palette knife as well. Did you have a style in mind, or was it just simply a case of I'm just going to experiment and just see where it goes?
Yeah, I think it's absolutely that. It's absolutely, I like what that can do. So I want to see how easy or difficult or what's involved with learning how to do it. And one of the hardest things for me with painting is trying to let go of doing a carbon copy image of what you're looking at, which is, I think, what a lot of people, you know, struggle with. And you tend to find that you get more feedback, perhaps, when you do a picture that's recognisable. And so if you do a nice field with some trees and to begin with, when I was learning, that was great, because it was more how good the artistic side, if you like, the artistry, the technique was. And I think with that started to grow a sense of trying to achieve what I like, what I want, to see, which is perhaps more where I'm at now. But yeah, I've got no problem. I've only ever stuck with acrylics because of that was what the very first set was. It was a set of acrylic paints with my Salvador Dali set. So that's what I've stuck with. Yeah.
So you've never branched out from there.
I've never tried oils. Watercolors looks a nightmare. It looks a complete mess. I mean, to be able to manage it, I'm not saying.
Yeah. You know, obviously, of course.
Masterpieces in watercolor, but no, to me, I'd smash my little shed up, I think. Sorry, just to give some context is why I'm smashing my shed up. I've got a little sort of 7x5 summer house shed that I've turned into my, because I took over the kitchen And I'd ruined another table and chairs with covering them in paint and so on. So I've ended up being banished to my little shed.
I see.
So, yeah, and I've just always stuck with acrylics.
Oh, fair enough, fair enough. Personally, my partner, she's trying to get me into painting, you know, especially during the lockdown with Bob Ross has been on telly, et cetera. And I just, much like yourself, I've said the same thing. I would need a shed. I would need somewhere where I could make a complete mess because I guess you said earlier on about paint being quite freeing. You know, when you look at some of those artists, like, again, I'm not going to, Bob Ross isn't, you know, he's not I suppose he is a superstar in some respects, but he's not what people expect when they talk about painters. But it is very freeing to see people just throw paint willy-nilly without care, not worried about being confined by anything. And if you make a mistake, you make a mistake, you just move on. I just say, and paint over it, I guess.
Yeah. And once you get used to get into that mindset that you know you can do that, it's never really ruined as such, then that is that is quite freeing. That is does open up a world of possibilities because it doesn't really matter what you do. So there's no getting it wrong.
Very true, very true. So as you say, you're not confining yourself to one style or technique, but over these next couple of years, you yourself actually posted that you'd recreated, I suppose, in some respects, in your own style, a Bauer piece.
Yes, Victor Bauer.
And in that sort of, there was a couple of years where a lot of your paintings, there was that sort of, that New York style street type paintings, lots of rain, some moodiness, etc. Figures in the darkness, etc. You know, Victor Bauer, as you say, Benoit, is it Havard? That's right. Then there we go. Thank you for correcting me. But there did seem to be at this point a definite sense of direction where, I mean, and as I say, you were definitely up in your game here. But there was, as you say, these artists, Wildman and Barr, that you know, a lot of night skies that you seem to be going down in that sort of direction. And was this a conscious move in yourself, or was this just you'd learned this style and you thought, I'm going to give this one a go for a while?
Well, I'd gone through all the teachers online and I pretty much exhausted what they were, and so when they were bringing up pictures of pretty little birds hatching out of eggs, or cats with big eyes and that. Exactly. It wasn't.
This terrifies me just you saying this. The thought of having to paint this, you know, not even draw, but, you know, painting animals is horrendous at the best of times. Drawing, I should say, but to paint them as well, oh God, now you're scaring me.
That wasn't what I wanted to do. And I did feel the confidence then to not copy an instructor. But what I was doing with the Victor Bauer pieces was I felt that I could work out to a degree what he'd done and how he was doing it. I felt a bit more confident to work out for myself without somebody telling me. So that felt like the next stage was to go from copying somebody's instruction to copying somebody else's work, and I was always very, very clear to say, look, this is brilliant, but it's not me. This is me copying somebody.
I've noticed that. Yeah. You always gave the artists, some credit there.
Yeah. Cause I hand on heart, have never sold a copy of somebody else's work. I've given a few away to people, but but that did feel like the next progression. At all stages, there's been a sort of natural progression from where I'm a bit more confident now to work to that, and then from there, as I say, I moved on to wanting to try and create a Victor Bauer type piece, but from a photograph. From a photograph rather than copying a piece of work. And that's kind of where I am now,
You mentioned obviously there about the photographs and obviously the early stuff was all stuff on YouTube, people teaching you on then. Did you find it easier to draw from a reference in that respect rather than get yourself out into the wild and go, do you know what, I'm just going to go and paint a building or whatever out in the wild, you know, you just the confines of your own little shed or your own little kitchen, where I guess the world cannot judge you as easily as if you're sat out in the street.
Yeah, that's right. That's absolutely what it is. It's a confidence thing. And whilst I'd love to paint, is it on plein air you know, I absolutely couldn't. If I was going to do that, it'd have to be like a hide that they'd use for shooting. So it's all camouflaged right. And nobody could see it. And I'd perhaps go out late at night or something. Right. Because, I have sort of little confidence in what I'm doing until there's an end product. And then I have either have something or I haven't, and it doesn't matter.
I know personally, I don't want to talk about myself, but you don't want people to see the work in mid-flow because it can look very unfinished. Yeah. It can look terrible, can't it? Now, paintings can look, they can look really, completely unfinished. And then all of a sudden, the last half an hour or so, all of a sudden you produce something that isn't a work of art.
Yeah, that's it. That's exactly that. And I think because I feel to some degree untrained and still consider myself as learning and, I'm teaching myself to paint and et cetera, that, it's still just a confidence issue, I think. Yeah.
So I'm going to move into the last year or so, obviously, with lockdown involved and lockdown painting. Obviously, as the world slowed down, I think from what I've seen in your work, there again has been a slight change in some respects in direction. And again, you haven't abandoned the rainy streets, the rain and the people and the darkness, et cetera, completely. Yeah. But you've started to paint some different landscapes, abandoned buildings, there's shop fronts, and you've also moved back to, and I can see that in the background there's a teacup behind you on the wall, I believe. Yeah. And you've moved back to individual objects like the fruit and the pegs, obviously bringing it kind of full circle in some respects. I think the last piece of work that I've seen certainly was a big opal, which was
a waffle. Yeah,
that's right. And obviously the first piece I saw was a big red cherry.
Oh, wow.
So again, was that another shift, I should say, to bring in new styles and techniques, or is it just a case of a lot of time on your hands and you just wanted to experiment?
It's a mixture of the two, I think. I think I've started to feel a bit, I was losing my confidence a little bit with my ability to create Bower-like images.
Really?
From my own photographs of Wolverhampton High Street, and the number 529 in the rain wasn't quite cutting it.
Wasn't yellow taxis.
Yeah, that's it. The Ubers in Warsaw aren't quite the same as a fleet of yellow cabs in New York. And so I was getting a bit, I found there were quite a number. It had been a while, I think, before I'd been really sort of satisfied and proud of something I'd done. So I decided, and I think it started with a peg, and it was in lockdown. I was sat outside, and I was working outside because I was working from home. And there was just some pegs on the table. The washing had been put up, and I just doodled one, and it turned into quite a nice little picture. And so then I went and painted it. And I was just so pleased with the process of I'd seen something and drawn it myself. Mm. And from my own drawing and reference the actual image, I'd made a really nice picture of this big pink peg. And yeah, so I did. And then I think I did some boots, a pair of old.
They're really nice, those boots. Yeah.
Those boots. The boots and nail varnish. They just happened to be something I thought I could give some contrasting colour, and obviously a big pair of man's boots and some nail varnish. And then I went through a phase of doing things like that. So now it is just, what I think could be an interesting image. So the blue apple, I just had was drawing a piece of fruit, and I thought, I don't just want to do just paint another apple, I'll paint a blue one.
and red has been quite prominent in a lot of your art. So you just decided, I don't want it a red apple.
Well, I've actually, because it's at the bottom of my stairs at the moment, that apple is. I've got it actually on the wall at the bottom of my stairs. I'm not sure why it ended up on the wall there, but I was thinking today I could do the same blue apple, but with more bites taken out of it going up the stairs. It's just a bit of a sort of series of them. Yeah.
It sounds there then, like, as you say, you just suddenly started thinking, well, I'm not just going to draw Bower, I'm going to start, there's a peg, as you say, there's an apple. The confidence did start to grow within you.
Yeah.
Now, during lockdown, finding the silver lining in this situation, I have noticed that there's been an Etsy store open up. I've seen more and more notes of these are commissions. So obviously there's more and more people you know, wanting a Dean Barker originals. I've noticed.
Well, that's right. Yeah.
Barker. So we've encompassed our artistic self. We're not just Dino. Was that a step into more professionalism? Was it?
It absolutely was. I never thought for a minute. And I'm still finding the whole commissions issue quite bizarre. And the reason I haven't put anything on for a while is because I've just done commission after commission for friends, and can you just do that? People sending me their holiday pics and so on. And I'm finding it quite hard, actually, because it's not generally anything I'd want to do. Like, I'm doing one, two sort of big pieces at the moment for my mom, bless her, and I was saying to Julie yesterday, they look like tea towels. They're just sort of an image of trees and blossom and two little children in the distance holding hands. An image she bought, and fine. But I do find it a bit annoying, if I'm honest. It's a bit sort of, can you just
not
do
inspiring.
Me? No. Because one, it's not, you just do me this? It's, can you spend, 2 weeks planning, practicing and do the, and not do what you want to do? Yeah.
Do you find these people saying, oh, have you got 5 minutes to do this, for me, et cetera, that people, when they don't spend the time to create art themselves, they don't realize how much effort and work actually does go into creating these pieces. And again, especially painting, because, like you've just said, you could spend a day painting something, realize there's something off, and you're going to have to wait for that paint to dry or whatever, and then redo it again. And when, if you're not, if you haven't got that love for that picture you're doing, because it is a commission, you've agreed to do it, that it is harder for you, I guess.
100% is, and I'm trying to find some way of getting out of it. I've cleared my backlog now with these two for my mom. And you were talking earlier about my little Etsy shop. Well, that was set up for me by my daughter, who was sick of me giving away paintings.
So she's the entrepreneurial one then?
Absolutely, yes. It's all
your business manager.
Yeah. And she's like, there's a block on me giving them away anymore. Put everything through her. So she set that up for me. And that's really nice. And I have made a little bit, not much, but a little bit of money. And it's going to buy me a bigger shed.
That's what it's for now.
It is, yeah. I'm going to build something a bit more, practicable, because imagine me and a desk in a 7x5 shed. There's not much else. There's not much else going on in there.
There's no room to splash in the paint.
That's it. Yeah, that's it. I can't really, step back and take it in. Yeah. So that's the plan. But it has taken that sort of, how much do you want for that? I'll just have it. And that's probably a lack of confidence, and I'm not really
Agree.
Yeah. So when people have asked for stuff, I'm just pleased and often shocked that they want it. And so for now, people I don't even know. There's one guy who's bought 5 or 6 different pieces. Yeah, he's. And it's mad. and part of me does wonder if it is like whether it's my wife doing it, just to sort of jib me up. Another box in the loft or something. That's what it'll be. Yeah.
So wrapping the whole painting thing up here, obviously with this last year the way it's been, and finding a silver lining in the situation of this last year. Do you feel in some respects, and this is a terrible way because thousands upon thousands of people have sadly passed away, but it's been a blessing to you as an artist to allow you to not only find the time to actually, step your game up and produce more, your productivity obviously has grown, but obviously it seems to have built you some form of confidence, like you say, for people actually purchasing these paintings. And, with you looking potentially to purchase yourself or build yourself a bigger shed, could you see yourself, if things went well, this means something that you'd like to do full time, or would that be too much for you because you wouldn't be free anymore?
I try not to let myself think about, could I do this full time? Could I actually, what's involved in being a full time painter full time. I struggle with an artist.
Yeah,
really. You know, I struggle with saying that. I tell them, I paint rather than I'm an artist or I'm a part-time artist or something. But yeah, lockdown meant that the focus came off the outside world. By that I mean sort of going out, doing anything other than work from home. And then you were at home. You were at home with your family. And actually, I think my first month's salary in lockdown, because I hadn't spent anything, we hadn't spent any money, not even petrol, not my usual sort of £90 a month in Starbucks, I was able to buy this little shed. And I did, and I found that it became focus. It was what I was either painting or I was planning a painting. Yeah.
Mm. So the lockdown has inspired loads of people have started a podcast. And I've got to be honest with you, a couple of months ago, I thought it was the same with you because I noticed, oh, Dean's actually doing a podcast.
Yeah.
However, it seems that your podcast, which involves three guys watching films, living life and talking nonsense, actually started 2 years ago. And it's actually called Don't Go Outside, okay, which seems very, very topical. And I believe in the early stages, it did seem to have something to do with pandemics and apocalypses. So did you have prior knowledge of what was about to happen? Or did you start it?
We did start to worry that we manifested something, because the original sort of, I don't know, half a dozen episodes perhaps, it was Don't Go Outside, and it was three men who were trapped at the top of a tower in a zombie apocalypse. And that's why we were together talking. I don't know where that came from. I think we just felt, perhaps give it a bit of context, the reason why we're just sitting around talking rubbish.
Yeah.
That was it. And the idea came for Pete came with it, and he said, let's be in a zombie apocalypse. Let's have noises, let's have crowds and, you know, a helicopter machine gun in the crowd and people trying to kick the door in and that. For the first, I'd say probably half a dozen episodes, that was it. And we basically just phased it out because it became less and less a part of what we were doing. And so we just carried on without it, yeah.
When we played football together back in the day, I knew that you had your fingers in bands in some way, shape or form. But it seems that the podcasts, because this is something I've discovered doing a little bit of research. The podcasts has its roots in the band with the three of you. We're in a band called The Monikers.
Uh-huh.
And the three of you now doing the podcast. And the name, Don't Go Outside, actually comes from one of your songs.
That's absolutely right. Yeah, we'd had a band. I mean, Pete, the singer, and myself, the bass player, we'd had our band since we were 12. You know, we were the school rock band at one point. And every so often when teachers could not be arsed to do an assembly, they would come and ask us, right, Friday morning, can band come play five songs? And we'd go and play old Black Sabbath covers and so on. We did that for a couple of years.
The name back then was different, though, by looks things. Was it Outlaw?
Yeah, we've had all sorts of rubbish.
The name got us into trouble. I read somewhere it says the name got us into trouble back at school.
Yeah. No, it got us into trouble at Junction 10 nightclub when a guy, a very, very nice guy who was a member of the Outlaws motorcycle gang.
Oh, okay.
and we'd all got denim jackets with Outlaw in some like a sort of banner. drawn on the back of our jacket, thinking we were advertising our little covers band, not realising that the members of the Outlaws, actual biker gang, might well have taken exception to this. And he came and said, if any of my mates see you wearing that, you're going to be in a world of trouble. And I don't mean this in any other way than we did stand with our backs against the wall and were the last people to leave.
So nobody could see what was written on your back.
No, nobody could see what was written on the back of our coats. So, we had a look at it. I think you recognise that we were just young kids at the time, but there may have been people who thought, well, they're old enough to come in here and he's not in our gang, so we're gonna give him a good hiding.
Right, fair enough. I listened to a few of the tracks from The Monikers. It is very cool indie rock, indicative of sort of a generation I guess in some respects that I grew up in the 90s, perhaps it was a little bit different from yourself, but you know, I kind of listened to it. I could hear a little bit of maybe the Levellers in there, maybe some Manic, yeah, a Dodgy, even some Ocean Colour Scene. Was there a sound you were looking for? Because I mean, again, it was very catchy, I thought.
Yeah. And that's absolutely the era and the what we went for, was yeah, that era. The Manics particularly, Pete and I absolutely loved them. And then Al came on board. It was a fantastic drummer. And he's got more of a sort of perhaps a proper rock background. Right. He was in a Pearl Jam covers band, I think, before he came and joined the Monikers. And it just sort of clicked. And it really worked. And we absolutely loved it. And yeah, we did 10 years or so. Yeah. And stayed good, mate. And we were good friends away from the band. So, and I mean, we were talking the other day, Pete and I, about the band, and he was sort of saying, "No, right, I'm 50 soon. In a few years, that'll be it. There'll be no guitars, nothing else." Because we've always been of the opinion of, "Well, we could do that. Let's try." Which is how the podcast happened. Pete, we actually did it. We did some stand up together.
Really?
Yeah, we did a week at the Edinburgh Festival in about 2012, 13, something like that, not long after I finished with the Rev. The American football team, I should explain, not too religious.
Yeah, to anybody who doesn't know.
And we went to the Edinburgh Festival and we watched it and we thought, well, we're funny. We could do that. We could write something like The League of Gentlemen. So we did, and we went back the following year and put it on for a week in the Holyrood Tavern at the bottom of the Golden Mile.
How did that go?
It was bizarre. The first night we went, and we literally had two matching T-shirts. That was as much as our costume as we had.
Right.
And a few props, one of which was a cheese salad sandwich we bought every day. We had to go buy a new one each day. And backstage was a curtain about a foot away from the wall, and we stood behind the curtain and the place was packed, and we absolutely just murdered it. And we thought, well, this is it. We're going to win the Perrier Award. Yeah. We're going to be on BBC Two. I'll be doing, you know, Children in Need this year, probably. But then the second night, did exactly the same show, and it absolutely bombed, absolutely died on its arse.
Really?
The third night, nobody come. Fourth night, a few came, but we said, come on, just come in. We ain't bothered about, don't worry about paying it. We're going to do it anyway, so come in. And yeah, they loved it. We got a really good night. And the last night was a handful of people in, and it was, it was like, and that was it, yeah, it was done.
You decided that was it, that was the end of your comedy career.
Well, we met somebody down there who was interested in putting us on in a few places down south. We thought, oh, yeah, that's it. That's got to be where it's happening, isn't it? You know, but we were kind of a double act doing little sketch comedy. So we were going to these trendy comedy clubs where they were expecting biting satire. And so me and Pete going
in. When did you say this was around 2012 to 2009?
Yeah, something like 14. That. Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So the political comedians are really now at this point starting to amp themselves back up with what was happening in Britain at that point.
Yeah. And we were going in doing sketches about a man who cut your hair, but only on your arse.
Right, okay.
The big joke being there that, you know, he wouldn't let the man go till he'd let him drop trow and trim the hair on his arse. Right. And so the audiences that were expecting Frankie Boyle and were getting a watered down crap League of Gentlemen were not best pleased.
Yeah.
And plus as well, it was, right, can you do 15 minutes tomorrow night in Bristol? No money.
Yeah.
And it was that, and we tried it for a few months, and in the end we just said, oh, this is too much. It's just too much. Whether we should have stuck with it and anything come of it, I don't know, but it was just too, with working as well. You know, we both.
You needed to be 21 again and
yeah,
tweet noodles and you know, and live that's on it. That. Yeah. Well, I'm going to get back to the comedy in a second. I just want to go back to the band for a second. because, you know, around that time or just after that, it looks like the band was actually doing pretty well. And from what I saw there, it looked like you kind of won a battle of the bands in 2015, and it stopped dead.
We didn't. No, I don't think we won one. I think we won a couple of hits. Oh, okay. And we were doing well. We had a we got a little our little demo that was knocking about, and we were doing it. And then we just struggled to get gigs.
Really? So it kind of feels like you've been climbing, and then just stopped. There was no Oasis style egos or anything like that then.
Absolutely not. No. Well, there is. We were all too worried that the others would go on without us. To leave or, cause a fight or anything. But yeah, and it just sort of the work side of it, which was the finding the gigs and the selling yourself. Pete concentrated on that. That was his baby. And he said, I'm just cannot get gigs. And we got like a little bit of a following at one point. And to get them to come to the same venue week in, week out, it was getting a bit much. And then the gap between gigs started to grow and grow and until we would do, I think, we did one a year. And I remember we did one at the Slade Rooms in Willenhall, Wolverhampton, sorry. It's a beautiful venue, Slade Rooms. It's have some really good bands on in there. But I noticed, that was the first time I noticed that I think it was the band we were supporting were about my daughter's age. And it did. I did think, right, I feel a bit like a fat middle-aged man sort of standing up here dancing about like a clown in front of a load of kids. And I became a bit self-conscious of it. And we carried on, and we carried on writing songs for probably a good year or so after that. But again, it became more of a social thing that we'd go and we'd rehearse for a couple of hours and then we'd go to the pub. And that's where the whole sitting in the pub like talking for a couple of hours was, God, aren't we funny?
Yeah.
How can we get this out to people?
And that's what I was going to say. Is that where it came from? The three lads having a laugh and that's when it moved on to the podcast, I guess.
Well, Pete discovered the podcast. I'm not saying he didn't discover it. I mean, he introduced me. he introduced me to podcasts, and my first love, like I suppose many people, was the Last Podcast on the Left, which was murderers, horror films, and that sort of thing. And it was three guys, and they sometimes they do over more than one episode. They do about a famous murder in history, and we said, right, let's do that. And we did it concurrently, but eventually our focus was that more than the band. So that's how
I suppose it's a lot less travel time and in some respects, setting up time and all the band practices, I guess. Whereas you can just sit down, turn the microphones on, and unlike tonight when it took me an age to try and sort out the the levels, press play or press record and go. So because I know you mentioned obviously with the comedy earlier on as well. I noticed at the end of the couple of podcasts I listened to recently, you're writing yourself a horror movie script, one show at a time. Each of you
give us a bit of content. I was never really into horror films. I love films. I've gone and watch films obviously all the time, but was never that struck on slasher films and Freddy and Jason and so on. Whereas Pete and Al were. So I thought, as just a bit of a regular thing, I'll watch the old classic horror films and review them. Tell you what I think. So I'll catch up. And after about half a dozen, I started to notice, well, hang on, that's happened in at least two of the films I've watched already. So I said, why don't we try and write our own? And that's where the idea came of writing a scene and then passing it on to the next guy. And what it has actually done is inspired a new idea that we're going to do, but quite a bit more seriously. And we've actually started writing a little radio play, sort of building on that.
Yeah.
And we're trying to work. We're looking at ways we can perhaps do that. Next.
Well, it's quite fascinating. And the reason, one of the reasons I kind of brought it up was Daryl was the first guest I had a couple of shows ago. He's also people know he's the producer of the show, but he himself writes a lot of these sorts of, I'm not going to say horror movies because they were audio type dramas. And he was doing a good one last year. Unfortunately, with the way the world was turning and things were happening, he had to stop because of the content of what he was writing. It was it wasn't alienating any part of society, but with everything going on in America, especially because yeah. that's where he is. He had kind of had to knock it on the head at the time. But it was just quite fascinating when I realized that this is what you guys were doing. The second person who was writing those audio type dramas. It was quite fascinating to hear, not see, to be honest.
Well, even though we've done this one in a sort of, I mean, we've done 8 or 9 scenes and we're at the end now.
Yeah.
And obviously in real life, that's not how we've written a little story in 8 or 9 scenes, really. But we wanted to, we're going to look to develop an idea in it and run it concurrently with the podcast. And do a sort of radio play type drama, yeah.
So keeping your hands kind of in lots of creative things there,
yeah, I guess. Yeah, I think I'm very much of the opinion that I can do anything.
I've got to be honest with you, Dean. It's quite funny because earlier on you talked, when we started talking about painting, you talked about how you had no confidence whatsoever. You couldn't do it. And then as we go through the podcast, you know, you've been at the Edinburgh Festival and thought, well, I'll give that a go. Why not? You've been on stage in front of, I'm guessing, hundreds of people, you know, playing your music. Sounds like there was hundreds of people, to be honest with you, if not more. You never seem to lack confidence. I understand where you're coming from about being very wary of what other people think. Yeah. To be honest with you, you never seem to lack confidence. And listening to the story about the band and the comedy and the podcast, et cetera, it's a case of, you know what? I'm going to give it a go. Why not? And if I fail, I fail. Who cares?
Yeah.
And so it is there is a certain amount of confidence in there. And I think that's,
But I think what it is with painting is because there's an end product, there's an element of being judged, and as well doing it on my own. Whilst I've done lots and lots of things, and you know, from team sports and so on, there's not many things I've just gone and so I'm going to do that myself, and painting it is exactly that. It is. It's right. I've done this. What do you think? And I think it perhaps ends up being a bit tied up of, I've done this. What do you think of me? You know,
maybe with the band and the comedy, etc. There's more than one of you, so it's easier. If you fail, you know what? You've had a laugh with a mate, so who cares?
Absolutely. Yeah. Okay. We've got a story we've dined out for donkey's years from Edinburgh Festival, but but yeah, this is. Well, this is me, and what do you all think?
Lay bare.
Can be a bit scary,
So you can see where you're going forward with, you know, writing an audio drama. The podcast obviously will probably remain and potentially morph into something else if needs be, but it certainly sounds like the three of you will keep going with that. But the art, you know, will Dean Barker ever decide, you know, I'm going to do an exhibition somewhere, or I'm going to give it a go on Sky Arts, you know, Portrait or Landscape Artist of the Year?
I think so. I think it's been such a part of me now for 5 years, and I've stuck at it and continued to work at it rather than just file, this is too hard, and it's been filed away in a drawer somewhere. So, and I think I do have the confidence to put on a little exhibition. See how there you go. I've put a little tentifier of saying a little exhibition. But yeah. a little exhibition around my mum's house. I think I absolutely plan to progress with this and keep working at it and exhibition and so on, onwards and upwards with as far as the painting's going. Absolutely, yeah.
Brilliant, absolutely brilliant. I've got to say it's been great to speak to you. I mean, once again, it's been a long time.
And
you know, hearing your voice on that podcast, you know, kind of brought a lot of it all back. Obviously, you do sound like the same one on the podcast, to be perfectly honest with you. You know, Al's got some theories. Let's put it that way.
Pete, we're as lost as you are with some of them, whether he's serious about them. Honestly, I don't.
Where can we find you online? You know, as a podcaster, and more importantly, obviously, as a painter, and where can we purchase your paintings or look at your paintings if people are interested?
Well, the paintings are on my my Etsy shop, and it's Art by Dino GB. And Don't Go Outside the Podcast is on Stitcher.
Brilliant. Well, again, thanks for coming on, Dean. Thanks for speaking to me.
Thanks for having me. good luck with the show. We'll give you a shout out on our next episode, whether you want me to or not.
Cheers.
Cheers. Thanks a lot.